from WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on June 16th, 1997. The band Radiohead released their new album at the time, titled OK Computer. It was a departure in many ways for Radiohead, and now, 20 years later, it seems like everyone is writing think pieces about the band and about the album. The one that got my attention was in The New Yorker, and before we go any further, let me clarify something. You do not need to be a Radiohead fan to enjoy this hour, because this is a conversation about human nature, about how we interact with one another. In The New Yorker, Amanda Petrusik wrote a piece titled, "The Whispered Warnings of Radiohead's OK Computer Have Come True." She writes that Radiohead essentially saw the future, the early 21st century. Their songs reflect the loneliness that comes from isolation in many ways, political malaise, addiction to frivolous stuff, Cyber Mondays and Paris Hilton and her ilk. So what did Radiohead know about us that we perhaps were refusing to see? What allowed them to see how technology would have the opposite effect of its intention, that instead of feeling more connected to the world, we'd feel more isolated, more alienated? Also writing for The New Yorker, the great Alex Ross writes that Radiohead became the Knights Templar of rock and roll. Ross says that OK Computer, quote, pictured the onslaught of the information age and a young person's panicky embrace of it, end quote. Our panel is composed of Radiohead aficionados, and it starts with Dr. Dave Chisholm. He's an educator, composer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and a comic artist, among other things.
Hey.
Welcome.
How's it going?
Very good. Thanks for being here.
All right.
Matt Whitten is the director of the University of Rochester Percussion Ensemble and faculty at Rowan University, is that right?
That's right.
Did I pronounce it correctly?
Yes.
Rowan, great to have you. Thank you for being here in
studio. Thanks for having me.
And Mona Segetol-Salami has come all the way down the hall, 30 feet or so, from her perch as a host on Classical 91.5, and she actually deluged me with Radiohead reading material, including some kind of a thesis that you wrote many years ago. Is that what was that for?
It was for a seminar on Charles Ives, and I wrote about how Ives and Radiohead interact with and move on from tradition.
Yeah.
It's a little embarrassing now.
No, it wasn't. I actually read the whole thing and I thought, you know, this sort of holds up, Mona. Good job with this. Let me just start broadly speaking. And again, to our listeners, I know if you're a Radiohead fan, you are probably a Radiohead fan. And if you're not, you're probably like, I know Green Plastic Trees. I'm not sure I know Money, or I know Creep. But listen, I want to start with this broad theme and ask Dave, I'll start with you.
Oh, gosh.
You know, Amanda Petrusik is keying on this idea that 20 years ago, we got to remember 20 years ago, we had dial-up internet just coming into play.
Oh,
most
yeah.
people still didn't have email. We were 10 years away from iPhones. We were 7 years away from YouTube. But Radiohead seemed to, in this album, warn about isolation. Now Tom York has said, that's because all they did for 2 years was travel on the road. He was tired of travel. He was feeling alienated, isolated from the world. But a lot of critics like Petrusik, among others, have said, now this is a really prescient look at us. 20 years later, we are isolated in this way. Do you agree with that?
I think it's a testament to the universal themes that are present in the lyrics. I think if you go back and look at the lyrics through what Tom York claims they're about, it's really true. I think 75% of the tunes on the album mention travel and cover travel in some meaningful way. And it's about, and it was written while they're on the road, totally isolated, living on a bus. But at the same time, the lyrics are just vague enough that you can sort of morph them to fit whatever, like, meaningful, they'll fill whatever vessel you want. And I think when you look at the production of the album, you do find, like, this sort of, like, cyborg sci-fi world where you don't know, it's like questions of identity come out. Some of the B-sides have some lyric content that's definitely like pertinent for like this sense of technological isolation that we all experience now. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess it's there. I'm a little bit more like, I think we tend to like look at art and find our own meaning in it.
And is that, well, that's one of the themes I was going to kind of land on later, and we'll get there, but I want to get the audience thinking about this question.
Yeah.
You know, if Tom York says it's just about travel, and hating being on the road, you know, are we reading too much into it and at our own peril, or is art that way? Is it for us to find that meaning? We'll get back to that. Let me just read what Petrusik wrote. I'll see what Matt thinks about this. She writes, quote, though York insists that OK Computer was inspired by the dislocation and paranoia of nonstop travel, it's now largely understood as a record about how unchecked consumerism and an over-reliance on technology can lead to automation and, eventually, alienation from ourselves, from one another. The disparity between these two things, the idea that everyone has gone on believing that the record is about the rise of machines, when York keeps telling us it's about how much he hated touring the world in a dumb bus, is fascinating. Matt, what do you think? What camp are you in there?
I think I agree with the article's premise, and I think I agree with what Dave was saying. You know, I think it might be some of us inflicting our own opinions and drawing connections, but that doesn't make it irrelevant or untrue. It just means that maybe that wasn't necessarily Tom York's intention or Radiohead's intention. But I think that is kind of a thing with art, is that the beholder can make their own judgments. And, you know, sometimes a poet writes a poem and meant something specific, but what that poem means to me is maybe different from the poet. I don't think that negates either assumption.
So in other words, it's one thing to say, you know, York and Radiohead were musical geniuses, that they were very profound in their thinking in many ways, but it's not like in 1997 Tom York is like, guys, there's going to be something called YouTube and you're going to waste your entire afternoon looking up the most ridiculous minutiae on there. Like, let's not give him too much credit there. I mean, it's sort of a push-pull for you.
Right. Yeah, I don't think he had a crystal ball, but I think he was keenly aware of what was happening to him, and I think there's a lot of parallels to me today about these feelings of isolation. Facebook, Twitter can often make me feel very alone if I get sucked into it too much. And I think that, even though didn't exist at the time, I think his traveling on a tour bus and having to constantly talk to reporters and constantly working the production angle of selling the album and the singles and whatnot, I think got a little bit tedious. And I think you can sort of feel isolated within that technology of travel in the same way that you can today with social media.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I mean, literally, they were traveling the world. They were interacting with fans in different states, cultures, countries. They were talking to media. So ostensibly, they were connected. And yet he felt disconnected. In the same way that we can now be connected via Facebook, via Twitter, via everything else with people all over the world. And yet what you're saying is you often, in the same way as York did on the road, you feel disconnected in those settings. Sometimes.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mona Segetol-Sami, what do you think?
I think that part of what informs this maybe is that why they do this so well, capture the specifics or the generals. First of all, they're really well educated. That's one of they come from so they're drawing on a lot of ideas, both musically and literature. I mean, alienation as a theme goes back a long time, and fears of the future in science fiction even goes back centuries. So if you want to talk about predicting YouTube, you think about the movie version of Fahrenheit 451, where she's addicted to the screen. I mean, I'm just imagining that pick any sort of fear of the future, dystopian, utopian sort of science fiction, they've probably come across it, reading it. They're well-read. They're musically well-read, belonging to their context of, and I don't know if you want to start to get into this, you can think about them as so much. They say, we just loved what we listened to. We wanted to be like the Pixies. We wanted to be like REM. We wanted to do this. But then they also can say, you know what? Johnny Greenwood says, I love Messiaen and Stockhausen and avant-garde classical music, or Mingus and all this. So they took everything they loved, and what they loved is interesting and broad.
Maybe let's split the difference here. Some people hear York and Radiohead say, well, we're just trying to write pop songs. And they're like, come on. Okay. But what Mona, what you seem to be saying is that may be true, but they had this foundational knowledge of the musical world that gives them a really interesting palette upon which to draw.
And I guess on the social ideas too, then, you know, many people can feel alienated. Heck, The Wall is about alienation. And as much as I perhaps guiltily love it, it's not considered as profound, probably, a meditation on our society. Is that that captures a lot of those ideas, but they give it an interesting specificity, I think. So, and then also, writing pop songs, we talked a little beforehand, you shouldn't necessarily trust artists on one sense, they could just be lying or messing with you, and the other side is that also they could just not see what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about Radiohead is they've always been bold enough to act on their influences as well, like claiming like Miles Davis, like 1970s, like experimental like jazz rock music as an influence on OK Computer is a little bit I don't doubt that influence is there, and it's bold of them to act on that influence, even if the songs are still pop songs with a generally pop structure, you know.
All right, so before we actually listen to some of the music, and what I'm going to do is sort of take my hands off the wheel and let our guests kind of drive the hour as we talk about some of the music from OK Computer, which again came out 20 years ago this month. And we'll take some of your phone calls as well if you want to weigh in on some of these themes of isolation, of what technology has done to us, of your thoughts on perhaps the band and where music sort of changes and where it goes and Radiohead's place in the pantheon. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Matt Whitten told me yesterday, you said you've always found Radiohead as compelling and integral to your life, your musical career, and your academic studies as Bach, Beethoven, Miles Davis, Coltrane. Why are they in that group?
Well, I think it's a complicated question because there's so many different kinds of music over the years that I've been influenced by. But if I had to narrow it down to favorites, that's kind of like who I tried to pick some really iconic, important people to me who I thought were also universally important to a lot of other people and to the history of music. And I think that kind of like some of the things that we've been talking about are they defy expectation, which is something if you study music history and you go to Bach, there's so many examples of Bach defying expectation. And the same thing with Haydn and Beethoven, Mozart. These were things that they were known for doing. It's what we all read about in the history books now. And I think Radiohead has done some of the same things. Like Dave said, you know, some of their songs are obviously pop tunes, but I think when you start comparing some of them to other pop tunes, there's something different about the Radiohead one, whether it be the layers to it, the instrumentation, the lyrical choices, or it could be that maybe they're, instead of doing verse and chorus, they put something different at the end of the song to change it up so that it's not just verse and chorus. So they kind of go out of their way, I think, to maybe break down these norms of expectation. But I think also a big part of this to us is where we were when we heard this music and nostalgia. And I think I also mentioned to you when I wrote to you about this show were some parallels with looking at comparing this to the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper, which is also having an anniversary right now. You know, my mother saw the Beatles when she was a kid on Ed Sullivan Show like everybody else did, and she's been a fan ever since. And so she grew up with the Beatles and their progression of music and albums and everything that they did. And Radiohead has been really similar for me. You know, Pablo Honey came out when I was in high school and I played Creep in a garage band. And OK Computer came out while I was an undergrad hanging out with all my friends geeking out about music. And then circa later on, I go back to school to do a doctorate and I cover one of Radiohead's songs in one of my doctoral recitals. So I think I have a connection emotionally and nostalgically with Radiohead's music. And I think I have a similar connection with Beethoven pieces that have moved me, you know, like pieces that usually for me, it's something that moves me emotionally.
If I was to add on to that, I would say that all of these artists, these iconic artists, it's not just about defying expectation, but it's also about dealing with tradition in a subversive way.
Yeah.
It's hard to be subversive if you don't have anything to lean up against, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not just surprise. Like, I think that sometimes if, like, music majors get inspired by Radiohead and decide to make their own band, they tend to just latch onto the surprise elements, and it's like an unlistenable mess because they reject all the elements that acknowledge the tradition, you know? So you look at a song like Let Down and it's like pretty, what's innovative about that song? Like, it still has this core song that's like, you know, A, E, F sharp minor and D. Those are the only chords in the song,
right?
I think. And,
but that overlying guitar.
But then you have this like incredibly like rhythmically interesting textured guitar arranging happening over the top of it, that's the part that like geeky music majors will latch onto and then be like, let's be like Radiohead and just have a song with tons of, you know.
And let me jump in and just say, listeners, again, we are going to get to some of the music in our second half hour. No, because I didn't want to overly saturate the first half hour with music just in case we had people in the audience who were like, I don't care about Radiohead. But listen, we're going to geek out a little on the music in the second half hour. But what you're hearing from Dave and Matt is a dissection of the music in the same way that we may talk about great classical composers, et cetera. I asked Christopher O'Reilly when he was in town from the top, you know, what holds up from this era in pop music? What are we going to look at in 50 years? What are we going to be listening to? And what are we going to be respecting? And the first thing he said was Radiohead. That's the first thing. You think so, Mona?
Well, I think it definitely rewards like study and being into it. So yeah, first of all, I mean, there's the side where I just say, I love it, it's great, and then I go back and look for all these reasons. But I will say, talking to someone who said, well, I don't really know Radiohead, and that's surprising in a way to me, like saying, oh, well, I don't know the Beatles. You can say love or hate, but it's so, you know, so much stuff, and they do have so much work, and it captures so many different styles. And like the Beatles, it rewards this sort of narrative exploration of the early, simpler stuff, the more experimental, like hitting it just right, maybe that's Revolver, and then the ooh, going over the edge, though, you know, so then that's for, so that follows that same sort of path, you know, you can look at it in it. And also, I was just thinking some, like, okay, Computer can be seen as the album. I think for some people, if guitar rock is going to its most experimental before it's not guitar rock, if you want to construct this narrative around it, that is the point. And then what could they do next is Kid A, and it's
totally
much more synthesizer and experimental. So I guess I forget. So, yes, it's good, it's interesting, it's relevant, it relates to so many different things, but it also, I think it rewards that kind of study and looking at how it evolves.
Yeah, before I get to some of your phone calls, a little pushback here. Rolling Stone, among others, have been a little brutal to Radiohead over the years, and there's a lot of the critics would say that we are all taking ourselves too seriously. And here's Rolling Stone's review of Amnesiac, which was a couple of albums later. They said, quote, it's already getting a negative reaction from people who took Kid A too seriously and now feel burned. But for some strange reason, it's a terrific record. Even the fuzzy instrumental diddles are pleasant background. It debuted at the top of the charts with no airplay, proving that there's something about this pathetically confused band that strikes a chord in these pathetically confused times. People obviously appreciate the lads for trying too hard at a time when nobody else even bothers.
What is me? Yeah, the trying too hard thing. That's, I guess, we can also get into. It's that they have thought so carefully, right? Like artistically, visually, they've put a whole vision together and they've constructed it. I guess that's also, I mean, you can say Kid A was the first album after OK Computer with no singles. They did upend a little bit how you think of just the standard business.
To get like kind of like political, I guess. I think American pop culture, American like the big monolithic culture, capital C culture in America, is really made uncomfortable by like aggressive intellectualism. And I think that this is a band of like a bunch of smart geeks who make music that's like thoughtfully crafted and smart and When people like Rolling Stone magazine loves like American like roots, like three chord, you know, I was born in a small town kind of stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. The world is big enough for all of these to exist and all be great. Like you can hold both these ideas in your head at the same time and be happy with it. But I think that this is a reaction that's built in like a cultural like reaction against like things that are strongly intellectual.
Yeah, and especially with the term pathetically confused. It's like we're addicted to this idea of certainty. Certainty is strength, and these British guys are just confused, and they're self-serious. I thought they're introspective. And if Thom Yorke in 1997 is writing themes, and again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about 20 years since the release of Radiohead's OK Computer, which is hailed as one of the great albums of all time, and there's a lot of think pieces about it right now. If that is hailed as sort of this prescient look at where technology was about to take our planet, maybe he's getting a little too much credit for that, but maybe that's because the themes are so universal and he was so thoughtful about how they composed some of those thoughts. So let's just grab a couple of phone calls and then we're going to listen to some music in our second half hour. I'll just get out of these guys' way. Shauna in Rochester first. Go ahead, Shauna.
Just interesting. I have a lot of people who say they feel very isolated and lonely, although they're connected to a bunch of people by Facebook. They have lots of correspondence online. I think that we are doing ourselves a disservice when we get to the point that we would rather send somebody who is 30 feet away from us at the workplace a text than get up and go over and talk to them. I think we need living people. And the funny thing is, or the not funny thing is, there are people who live in apartment buildings. They cannot tell you anything about the people who live just down the hall, and they're on the internet, sending emails hours a day. And I think that is doing something to our sort of group psyche. I don't think it's good for us. I think we need to actually be with people sometime. Obviously, the internet is a great boon in the sense that you can keep up an email correspondence with an old friend who lives overseas that you're not going to see anytime soon.
All right, Charles.
But I think to substitute technological contact with real contact when we have the option, we are not doing ourselves a favor. After all, we are evolutionarily connected to monkeys, and monkeys all have a great sense of community and sense of being one of a bunch.
Well, Shauna, thank you. Whether Shauna is a Radiohead fan or not, I mean, I think a lot of people are looking back at OK Computer 20 years ago and getting that kind of idea. Matt, you agree?
I do agree. I think she hit the nail on the head for me anyway. A lot of the things she said ring true, and friends of mine who know me and family members know that I would actually prefer to talk on the phone if possible, and I would definitely rather text than just connect through Facebook. And I think that those are some of the dangers that we're seeing, and what I was thinking when the caller was talking reminded me of what you had just said about referencing when OK Computer came out, and Tom was talking about how they were just touring constantly and there was, you know, this sort of disconnect, feeling alienated, even though he's surrounded by thousands of people. But he's making the music in that concert and then he's touring with these same guys, so like they're probably getting sick of each other, you know, like being on the bus together, and maybe they're not able to contact their family as much as they want, and there's their other friends, and so you do start to have this disconnect of actual human contact, even though you're surrounded by people everywhere. And I think it's kind of the same thing, like on Facebook I have, like, you know, over 1,000 friends or something, but I'm not actually connected with all of them at the whole time.
Hey, Sam, let me just blow your mind for a second. You ready for this? When York would stand on stage in 1996 when they were traveling and have thousands of people liking his music, it's like getting a ton of likes, and you think for a second that this is filling some kind of a void, but you're lying in bed later going, I got nothing out of it today. That wasn't real interaction.
I think Bob Seger sang about that one and turned the page. Oh, sorry.
He said, well, you know, there's some connections.
No, but I don't know, just counterpoint, though. I know it's more clear, the loneliness, when you realize there are people nearby. You could have not been on Facebook, lived in a small village, or it's like me growing up in a small town in Jersey, and just be alone. Alone, 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 and not even an illusion of someone being out there.
That's fair.
I guess I also, though, you know, I'm not.
We don't want to be super anti.
I'm not immune to the alienation, but the notion when I could find, like, if I liked one kind of music or one kind of thing, one specific book or TV show, to actually not know anyone day to day in my life who liked that thing, and then I guess, you know, the long tail, to meet someone online and to be able to talk about all that.
Social media has allowed for representation, people to find communities, no matter what their ideals are, and for better or for worse, you know, like that. Lonely kid in a small town now can go online and find all the lonely kids in small towns that like manga, you know, or whatever.
And that's the strange thing about, perhaps, when we were talking about Radiohead and the criticisms, oh, it's so arty. I saw an avant-garde jazz trio at the Lutheran Church last night at the Jazz Fest. Nobody's telling them, don't be so arty, because they don't necessarily even know about them. It's almost the weirdness is, this is very conscious and experimental and all these sounds, but it's also insanely popular at the same time, and that's a weird thing to my mind sometimes.
Like, both sides are frustrated. Like, the really arty people are like, oh, they think they're arty, but it's just a pop song. And then the people who are, like, in pop music are like, hey, keep that arty stuff away from my perfectly polished turf, you know, AstroTurf or whatever.
But it's strange to realize. I mean, for it to have been, because that's the other thing besides all this is why they matter in some ways is because they matter. They are, and especially were, huge, right? Like what drew everyone
Tom
to
York's
it?
Tom York's like 5'5". Yeah. He's not that huge.
Oh, God. No puns. And though that was a tautology, you're right. They matter because they matter. They were OK Computer was, by the time they got home from touring about it, the people were saying it was one of the most important albums that had ever come out. I want to get a couple more phone calls in, and then we're going to do some actual music here. Matthew in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hi, good day.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes. So I would just like to say that I think OK Computer was a revolutionary album. When it came out, I was about 15 years old. The name itself has such a great theme. It's like, it always reminded me of, like, Tom making a mistake and, like, being like, oh, okay, computer, you just, you know, replied this weird thing to me. And it was always just responded, like, with an okay computer. The other thing I want to say is I love how the guitar effects were so, like, just, they were very imaginative, and they did a lot of different unique styles and polyrhythms with an incorporated inside of a pop song. And it actually, one other thing about the whole interaction thing, I'm actually calling from a flip phone and I am a minimalist on the internet.
Uh-huh.
I'm also a musician and I'm a synthesist. I love to mess with synthesizers and stuff. So I was very heavily influenced by OK Computer for my own musical abilities. And then there was a great prelude to Kid A, which incorporated much more synthesis in it. And I think it had an effect on music as a whole. I think people that understood Radiohead really got it. And they were like, this music is revolutionary. So.
Well, Matthew, thank you for that. That reminds me that I think Nokia is bringing back the dumb phone. Because there's more people like Matthew who just want a phone to be a phone and don't have to feel, quote-unquote, connected like that all the time. Thank you, Matthew, for the phone call. Tim in Fairport next. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on Radiohead. I was first song I heard from them was Paranoid Android, and it affected me so strongly I had to pull off the side of the road and got goosebumps on my arms and... just was blown away by it.
What a great song to start with.
And I don't know if you're familiar with Christopher O'Reilly, but he's actually done two albums by them, and he's said that if Bach or Beethoven were to come back today, they wouldn't be playing in classical orchestras. They would be using the latest technologies as they did in their times, and he considers Radiohead to be the Bach and Beethoven of our era. And if you listen structurally and to what they make and how they produce their music, it's just absolutely different than anything else out there. It's almost like Frank Zappa. I think they used the rock idiom to be able to produce serious music that otherwise would have been left behind someplace. So I just was blown away by them, and their new albums, newest album, Moonshaped Pool, is just... another new frame that they've completed, and it's just an amazing album also. So,
Tim, thank you. Thanks for the phone call. He mentioned Paranoid Android. Let's listen for a second. All right, so Matt, what we're hearing right now, again, for our audience that might be new to this, why does this land so strongly with you?
I was worried you were going to put me on the spot like this.
That's why you're here, man.
Well, I mean, there's so much to it. I think it's got some basic guitar riff that's driving it. It's got this... soaring, haunting vocals, which I think is a big part of what draws a lot of us to Radiohead, is what Tom is doing. And now, as you hear, this part of the song is starting to really build into one of the sections that we probably get them that label of prog rock, just because of this open-ended structure.
Meter changes.
All right, let's listen for a second.
Yeah. Man. Like here, we're in 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Boom. Even changing meters. And now we're getting harder. They're bringing in more distortion, more noise.
It's a song. It's a song without a chorus, too, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
Like the form on this song. That's what drew me in initially. Because at the time when this came out, I was like deep in the jazz, like obsession, and this song came out, I heard it on MTV, and I was like, there's no chorus, this is like 6 minutes long, or however long it is.
6.5, yeah.
And then some of the, like, then when you, like, at every level, as you magnify, like, the form is interesting, and then as you magnify, like, the chord progressions are super interesting. There's unusual resolutions that go from, like, sharp side to flat side kind of harmonies, like the resolution from, like,
right here.
E major to C minor, you know, like these unusual things that, like, as like a trained musician, it kind of like makes my ears perk up, you know. This whole section has unusual harmony resolutions, but it manages, and they manage to toe that line without sounding really, like, well, to my ears anyway, it still sounds like authentic. It doesn't sound like they're trying to be clever, but it's incredibly clever without like self-consciously being so clever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nona?
Just also here, they're doing right that descending thing that goes back to Purcell and to anyone
totally.
Else, that great
yeah.
effect. I don't know. Just also, to me, still just so much texture, so much going mm-hmm. on. I just think of this album also hearing there's like weird sounds in the background. Mm-hmm. It's become, as I get better headphones, even more rewarding
yeah.
hearing the things sound that like seagulls or crying kids or like
that's
this
a
weird...
guitar.
Singing yeah. up high on from a great height. I mean, it's textural alliteration. I think there's so many layers. I think this was something to me in this song. I just, this part comes at the end of the song and these counter melodies. I just wasn't hearing anybody else doing something like that. And I still get chills right now thinking about it.
Well, it's Paranoid Android. 20 years ago, Radiohead released OK Computer. And a lot of critics and a lot of writers are looking back 20 years ago saying, you know, not only was this important album that sort of elevated Radiohead in the status of what they did in the rock world, but also prescient for some of the themes that York and Radiohead were creating and writing about. So we're talking about that with our guests. You just heard Matt Whitten, who is the director of the University of Rochester Percussion Ensemble and faculty at Rowan University. Mona Segetol-Sami is our colleague from down the hall, a host at Classical 91.5. And Dr. Dave Chisholm is an educator, composer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and a comic artist. He loves all those titles. He didn't know if I would read them all. I did. All of them. So let's get our only break of the hour. We'll come back with more music and more conversation about the themes from OK Computer. Coming up in our second hour, a panel of journalists talks to us about how they make decisions on what they cover and what they choose not to cover. Our conversation is based on Megyn Kelly's recent interview on NBC News with the conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. Critics said she should never have given him the publicity. Kelly said, "We have to expose anything that has this much power." Let's talk about that kind of decision next hour.
Fitter, happier, more productive, comfortable, not drinking too much, regular exercise at the gym, 3 days a week. Getting on better with your associate employee contemporaries, at ease, eating well, no more microwave dinners and saturated fats, a patient better driver, a safer car, baby smiling in backseat, sleeping well, no bad dreams, no paranoia, careful to all animals, never watching spiders down a plug hole, keep in contact with old friends, enjoy a drink now and then, will frequently check credit at Moral, bank, hole in wall, favors for favors, fond but not in love, charity standing orders, on Sundays reading road supermarket, no killing moths or putting boiling water on the ants, car wash, also on Sundays, no longer afraid of the dark, only day shadows moving.
If you're not a Radiohead fan, you have no idea what you're hearing. This is a song called Fitter, Happier. And Mona Segetol-Sami, why is this so interesting to you?
Well, one, just the sounds, again, the textures, the very alien computer voice, something describing something that should be better, right? All these nice things that you're doing, and seems to, if you want to talk about prescient, actually, this fits into the Fitbit measured, you know, world of, like, your device tracking everything. Am I getting enough steps today? I have a mindfulness app. Am I thinking enough mindful thoughts? So it's all these nice things, but it's also, it's a nightmare, right? This is, so it's the utopia dystopia thing again. And yeah, that's, I guess, just a few things. And the fact that this shows up in the middle of a pop album, someone let that happen and get out there.
Yeah, some of the lyrics there. Fitter, happier, more productive, comfortable, not drinking too much, regular exercise at the gym 3 days a week, getting on better with your associate employee contemporaries, at ease, concerned but powerless, an empowered and informed member of society, pragmatism, not idealism.
Also slacktivism. There we go.
in many ways, right? And look at how it ends. A pig in a cage on antibiotics, which might have been metaphoric or might have been just a little commentary that those of us who are actually concerned about pigs in cages on antibiotics would go, why did we do that in the first place? Why did all these things seem like good ideas?
That's actually where the general references become specific again, like that or another song references the IMF protests, the International Monetary Fund. That's still a concern, kind of, but also that was of its, that's one of the few, like, very of its age things.
Yeah, so anyway, that's cool. Fitter, happier. Dave, thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is, this is one of those love-hate tracks, you know? This is probably the most skipped track in history. Right.
It's got to be.
Along with Revolution 9, maybe?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, that's definitely... I mean, if it wasn't for vinyl being,
back in,
like,
the USSR.
Yeah. But, yeah. But, like, this ties into the album, like, themes in the album of... From my point of view, identity, right? We have fake versions of real things throughout this whole album. And then we have the real versions of those things that we heard as fake before. So this is, like, a... obviously, like, a robot voice, you know. Throughout the album, we have, like, Mellotron strings, but some tracks have real strings. We have the first track, Airbag, has, like, drums that have been completely processed to hell, right? And then, obviously, on other tracks, we have regular drums. And so, like, it's sort of like this blurring of the line between identity, digital, and, you know, physical identity. It's this sort of, like, cyborg. I mean, I keep going back to this word cyborg. It's a little bit of a hilarious, funny sci-fi word, but I'm not to get too meta about it, but when you look at the song on the Bends, Fake Plastic Trees, the lyrics are about this, about, like, the fake versions of real things, right? And then this album is, like, the embodiment of that. And then Kid A, it gets even more, like, blurred and strange and everything. So
okay, Matt, what do you think?
I think it also, it has a place of hierarchy in the album. You know, I think, kind of like Dave said, like, it's the least song-like of the whole album. So, like, if you're really listening to it, you know, you might skip over it. For me, though, the most significant thing about OK Computer is its entirety. And I don't ever listen to just one song. And honestly, I would never skip this track. I only listen to this, like,
I don't think Dave is endorsing skipping. I think he was observing that it might have been skipped by a lot of people.
Yeah, and I get the point.
Maybe
and,
he skips it.
And I get that point totally, you know, because it's not really a song compared to the other songs. But when you look at the album as a whole, this has a central place of importance. You know, we just finished Karma Police, which is maybe the poppiest song on it. Also, maybe one of the best songs on it. One of my favorites. Very relevant lyrics. And then after that, it goes into one of their more upbeat, high-energy songs, which is not as, you know, usual for them. And the album constantly is going back and forth, juxtaposing between major and minor, happy and sad, sort of positive and negative ideas. And I think this is sort of like right in, at this sort of pinnacle moment where the album is going to sort of, you know, keep doing that until the end when you get the last song, The Tourist, which is kind of like a sort of positive but also kind of dark song at the same time.
But for all the talk of prescient, I mean, if Thom Yorke had just thrown one line into Fitter Happier about juice cleanses, I would have known that man could actually see the future.
Selfies.
selfie sticks,
well,
and juice
actually,
cleanses.
There's a line in the song Lull, it's one of the B-sides, that's, there's nothing more dull than talking about yourself. Mm. And I thought, this is, again...
Yeah. Selfie world.
It's always been dull to talk about yourself, like, you know. But it's now it's a more, like, we have such a culture that caters to people's narcissism and stuff like that.
And that's one of the interesting, look how much we're tying Radiolab into everything, Radiolab, Radiohead into, look at NPR me, Radiohead into everything these days. The criticism, one of the really interesting criticisms I've seen of all things, of Mark Zuckerberg's sort of quasi-presidential tour, he's in Iowa, he's in New Hampshire, he's meeting voters, he's talking to people with pigs on a farm. Chris Arnotti, the writer who's done a lot of this kind of work himself, has said the problem is that Zuckerberg's making this all about himself. Every picture you see, Zuckerberg is the one in the middle of it. You know, he's not actually chronicling other people, he's chronicling himself with other people. And that makes it less interesting, you know. So,
yeah.
Well. That gets to then a criticism that's often thrown at heady music, one that I dislike the criticism. People say that's self-indulgent. I even heard it about the Bill Frisell performance the other day. I'm like, well, who am I going to go see? That gets to if talking about yourself isn't interesting, but always trying to appease other people is also not interesting because there's nothing. Like, if you're interesting, indulge yourself artistically and let me see the results, sort of, you know.
Absolutely.
So that's my sort of. And that, and then the only other thing we'd talk about prescient is it may have been prescient in terms of music history-wise. This is getting back to your article. I would say that a lot of critiques, or some critique at the time of what they were doing, they're drawing on the guitar rock tradition and Britpop, but they're also, and they cite the Beatles and all sorts of things like that. You know, we're trying to be the Smiths, we're trying to be the Pixies, but then also Tom and I think also Johnny Greenwood working in electronic and dance and experimental music. And at the time, that was seen as diluting rock. Now, with our author, Amanda, looking back, she's saying, can we still like a big guitar rock album? Or, you know, is guitar rock as seen as not fitting into our more dance music influenced world? So that it's almost, there's been a perspective.
She also decries some of the sexism, some of the racism that sort of occasionally pops up uncomfortably when we look back at some of those albums.
Well, yeah, because
and says Radiohead doesn't have that.
So they don't do it. But, you know, maybe rock guys in garages is seen as a white suburban constructed thing.
Or like as something that like by definition, rock music, guitar rock happening right now is inauthentic to like your like to now. And I don't know if I agree with this. I'm just, this seems to be like questions of identity for like, as when you're making music, you want to think I think authenticity is an important aspect of that music. And so in this day and age, there's so many influences and it's impossible to not be touched by all these influences that a decision to just make like a rock album is almost by definition looking back through rose-colored glasses at like the 70s and the 60s. And
boy,
like
Dave
that.
Should have been here for our discussion on Billy Joel and authenticity. But
whoa,
that's in the podcast files now, and you can find it in our archives at wxxinews.org/connections. You know, Matt Whitten just mentioned the previous track. Let's listen to a little of Karma Police, and then we'll talk about why Matt thinks that might be one of the best tracks on OK Computer. Yeah, I wonder if we've got... Oh, no, we do. Okay. Yeah, let's listen a little bit here. All right, so this is Karma Police, and one of the things that Matt Whitten mentioned was this is maybe their most traditionally pop song on the album, maybe the most well-known from
very
them.
Accessible.
Very accessible. But, you know, and if when we get to the last minute, you'll listen and be like, oh, I recognize that. So, but is accessible a pejorative to you here?
I guess so. It doesn't bother me. You know what I mean? I think that this is a great song, and I think if you want to look at... If you want to look at this, its pop elements as being a negative thing, that to me is not a deterrent. It's,
okay.
I kind of like what Dave said earlier. I mean, like we can, these things can all coexist, you know.
And lyrically, you mentioned that the lyrics are relevant, important here. So take me through why you think some of the themes here are important.
Well, I think we can all, at least I can empathize with this idea of society or technology, information overwhelming us. Like it's buzzing like a fridge. Like there's all these people talking and you don't hear anything. You just hear noise. You just hear this, you know, like a detuned radio. You know, and you're sitting in a coffee shop and you're trying to do work or whatever, and you're hearing some woman, you know, and her voice is getting on your nerves or something for whatever reason, or maybe it's her Hitler hairdo. But I think also, you know, for me, a big part of what's great about this song is the last section, because it's verse and chorus, which is totally normal. And then even the way it ends, like nowadays, this is not so completely earth-shattering to have a different section at the end of a song instead of repeating another verse.
But it's still not verse, chorus, bridge, chorus.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. And I think in the end, so to me, like where it's not that groundbreaking is because, you know, Beethoven would do that with his symphonies. You'd have basically A, B, A, and then at the end we'd have what's called a coda, where it brings in some new ideas that maybe weren't in the previous 10 minutes of the movement. And I think that's kind of what happens at the end of this song. And that's, to me, like a real high point at the end there, because it's like out of nowhere we get this, for a minute there, I lost myself. It's like one of the best parts of the song.
It's beautiful singing, yeah. A little bit more beautiful than you just heard from Matt. And think about those lyrics there.
Man, I thought
for a minute there, thanks, for a minute, man. There, I lost
myself. I'm not warmed up or anything.
Matt, what's he saying there to you when he says, for a minute there, I lost myself?
I think he's talking exactly what we're talking about. I think he's talking about losing himself in all of this chaos and all this information and in this world of millions of people feeling by yourself. And
that's sort of 19, he was writing this in 1996. Yeah. Mona?
I would say the other thing maybe, because the way he talked, it ties into this theme that comes up, if I'm going to go back to the wall again, I, the rock star, have become the horrible dictator, god emperor, whatever, is, you know, I, like, you know, this is what you get when you mess with us. He is like, I'm the bad guy in this story. And so for a minute there, I lost myself. I became a monster.
Yeah,
I don't know. That could be.
I agree. Yeah, that's a great perspective.
So, saying, like, we're still on the payroll. You know, I think that the lyrics in on, what's the song? Now it's going to, My Iron Lung show like a lot of self-loathing about the success that Creep had. And I think this is still them like latching on to like they stumbled upon this like ridiculous commercial success with this hit. And everyone said they were going to be a one hit wonder. And they felt a lot of like I think the band is filled with like introverted dudes, and they weren't really very happy about being thrust into this spotlight. And they're almost like constantly looking for a way out of the spotlight by making music that's like a little bit less, you know, like accessible and everything.
And we keep loving it.
Yeah.
we kept loving it despite the fact that, I mean, I for example, in exactly when this band was out there breaking through, I had members of my family trying to break through and had record industry executives telling them, this is good stuff, but we need a hook. Can you dumb it down a little? Can you bring us something with more of a hook? And what Radiohead is saying is, no, and I don't care if it doesn't work, and it turns out it worked. And one of our listeners, Dave on Twitter, says, he says that this song for him is this really beautiful sort of triple meaning, but he points me to an article that concludes with this. York points to the stress of working in capitalism, and in the end, karma police is just a call for something good when something bad has happened. So thank you, Dave. Very interesting.
I like that.
And we're down to our last minute here. Matt Whitten, some quick final thoughts from you. This album really holds up. Will it hold up well into the future, you think?
I have no doubt. No doubt. I think this is... For me, I mean, this is the comparisons that people make to this other great records. Mona mentioned The Wall. I mentioned Sgt. Pepper. There's many other. Someone mentioned Frank Zappa. Freak Out could be another example. I think it's going to stand the test of time. I think the fact that we're talking about it now, the fact that it's been written about, I think those are all the same things that might make the band a little bit uncomfortable to talk about being history as they're making it themselves. I can see why that would feel uneasy, but Nonetheless, I do think that's what's happening. This is history.
Matt's the director of the University of Rochester Percussion Ensemble and faculty at Rowan University. Dave Chisholm is the man who walked in and gave me a disc of his own there. I'm glad we still make CDs, by the way. That's nice.
Yeah.
And Mona, we're going to listen to on our outro. You're going to hear Mona Tsagatolsami on Classical 91.5 today. We're listening to what as we say goodbye here?
Exit music for a film, which you may have heard in the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet or the DiCaprio, you know, the one where it kind of broke out as more popular thing.
Exit music for a film is the exit music for our discussion of Radiolab 20 years after the release of OK Computer. More Connections is next.
That you chose.